Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another round of the Mains event on KPCRradio.com. I am, of course, your host, Joshua Mains. We all know that globally, soccer is the most popular sport. According to FIFA, there are 256 million players actively involved in soccer around the world. It's about 4% of the overall population. However, here in the U.S., while popularity may be growing, it is still a small niche market. With us today is Pierce Women's Soccer Coach, Adolfo Perez. How are you doing, Coach?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, you grew up in Mexico, surrounded by soccer. Obviously, it's a little more popular than it is here.
Yeah, it's life.
So, how different really is it than the perception of it in the U.S.?
Well, you know, I actually was born here and then left at an early age. And where I'm from, Guadalajara, which is the second biggest city in Mexico, just like in every city in Mexico, it's like it's passion. You know, it's everything. People miss their weddings. People miss things for, you know, in South America, presidential elections have to be canceled because of a World Cup qualifier. I mean, it's pretty insane.
So how far did you go as a player?
I played actually, I went to Birmingham High School, played 3 years. Back then it was 3 years of high school only. Then I played 4 years at Cal State Northridge. We made the transition after my first year from Division II to Division I. So I played 3 years of Division I. After that, I went to Mexico, and there's two different levels. There's like the first division and second division. I played professionally in the second division for 2 years. I was supposed to go back, and faith has it, I started coaching a club team and just really fell in love with it. You know, I had already acquired my license while I was playing in Mexico, just for the future. I didn't think it was going to happen that fast.
So while at CSUN, obviously you said you were there when they transitioned from D2 to D1. So after that first year where it was D2, now you're on to playing D1 talent. Could you see a significant difference?
Without a doubt, you know. We actually had a good team. 89 was the last year of Division 2. In 90, we transitioned to Division 1. It goes hand in hand because you're able to get more money to go after, you know, better players. So, the team was good.
Do you still play at all?
I try. You know, I'm involved. I coach here at Pierce, and I also coach club with Real SoCal, which actually is out of here, Pierce College as well. So I coach every single day, including weekends, so it's hard. So yesterday I did some shooting with Pierce girls, and I'm still sore.
So what drew you to the other side of the field? What really brought you to coaching?
I think just the passion. I think you, as a player, you're individual, and as a coach, you're in charge of a whole team, you know, and just being able to help. You know, we've been so blessed here at Pierce. This is my 17th year. I was the first and only coach so far in the history of Pierce, and the success we've had here is I could never imagine. You know, we're the only team in the state of California that has made postseason every year. Knock on wood. And it's hard because in 2 years school, you have a different team. People say every 2 years. I think it's every year, you know.
Yeah, that's always the issue at a 2-year school, you know, constantly cycling new talent. This. So obviously 17 seasons, 11 conference titles, 6 straight at one point, overall record of 268, 53, and 60. No state titles, though. What do you have to do to get over that hump?
I think one of the things that has stopped us, we've been 4 times in 03, 05, 10, and 12 were the closest years. And I really believe over the hump, without using an excuse, is that if you look at the last 15 state champions, every single coach is full-time at the school. And there's a correlation to that. For instance, for us, you know, I coach Pierce 3 to 5 and then coach club from 5:30 to 8:30. The kids that I coach at club, I coach a high level club. So my players are going to Stanford, Duke, UCLA. We don't get those kind of kids. So I lose out on recruiting. Like if you're full time, just worry about your day job here and then go recruit. You know, and there has to be a correlation to that, a fact, because I did my research that last 15 years, without even going even further, every coach has been full-time. Because you have to be able to recruit the best players for you to win a state championship. We got in 05, we played Long Beach in the semifinal and the final four at Pierce. We went to shootouts, and it's the best out of five. And we were up 3-1. And somehow, just when it's not meant to be, they changed the goalie during the shootouts. We missed three in a row. They made four, and they beat us. They went on to win the state championship 8-0 that year. So obviously, you know, that was us, but okay, you know, that's been the closest.
That was definitely the closest. So this year, 9-4-3 right now. A little bit of struggles. Would you call this a down year at all?
For the standards, for most programs, no. For Pierce, yes. We started the year. We always packed our schedule. If across the board, we probably arguably the hardest schedule of anybody else. Because in soccer, I don't know how their sports are run. It's by RPI. Mm. So basically, we were number 7 last week. We got 2 wins over Glendale and West LA. We dropped to 16. So people that don't understand are like, wait a minute, you win, but you drop. It's because of the record. Mm-hmm. So conference, we have no control. Those are the opponents that we have to play twice. So we got more points losing to Cerritos than beating Glendale 8-0. To some people, it would sound strange, but that's how RPI works.
Yeah, it definitely is the same issue I hear from all the coaches. I had Nabil in here last week. We had the same discussion. I know essentially it was using RPI that kept baseball out of the playoffs last semester. So yeah, it's all these computer numbers that are so popular nowadays, but obviously it's the way it is. Mm-hmm. So obviously you guys beat Glendale 8-0. Would you say that was kind of a turning point? You've won 3 in a row since that
game.
Yeah,
I think I always have this model, like I use no excuses. But the fact of the matter is, we began the year, we beat traditional powers, Moorpark, Ventura at Ventura, who had beaten us in the playoffs a year ago. Very strong squads, deeper than us, and we were able to do it. And then fourth game into the season, one of our best players went down with an ACL. That was in the fourth game. On the sixth game, we lose Leslie Holan, another forward. And then arguably our strongest player, who was going to head it to Division I, Giselle Cruz, has not been herself. She's played with a hurt quad since the third game of the season. So it's been tough. It's been tough because you can say, well, that's 3 players. It's 3 key players, and you have to maneuver. You have to, you know, not just their spot, but everything else changes. So we've been hit, and I get it. Injuries are part of the... But we've been hit big time this year.
Yeah. Obviously, staying on injuries, you mentioned Adriana going down for the year with the knee. As a coach, when you have one of your captains, not just one of your top players, but she's one of your captains, how do you make an adjustment mid-season when you lose a player like that?
It's hard because we play a standard 4-4-2 this year because that's you play according to the players that you have. And basically, we have 4 lines. We have the defensive line, midfield line, and forward line. And one player cost us to change all 3 lines. So it makes it really, really difficult.
So today you guys have a bye, which is why we were lucky enough to actually get you in studio. So when you have a bye during the week, does that change your approach as a coach to the practice schedule or anything?
Well, what's amazing to me, I already got miraculously about 10 calls of girls being sick, injuries. 3 of them, their carts don't start. So it's tough. You know, that part, just laugh at it now because it's like, you know, you got to be kidding me. You know, we should take it the same approach. Biggest game of the year, arguably, is coming next Tuesday. You know, we have to be all in. You know, it's our biggest game. We have to win. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be hard. Hostile environment. At 3:00 in Santa Monica, turf, so everything that's not, and we put ourselves in a situation because we should have beat them here. We had great opportunities. We reviewed the tape, and we just didn't get it done. We got distracted for a couple of seconds, and they scored a goal, and that was the difference.
So you mentioned that Santa Monica has a turf field. How does that change the approach for the game plan?
Changes approach because it's much faster. You know, where we play, it's called the pit. So it's grass, and obviously it's contrast. It's hot, it's fast, and then so turf is fast, grass is slow. So we're training an environment where it's hot and it's slow. We're going to go to an environment where it's going to be cool and it's going to be fast. So to some people, though, outside the line, all those factors do matter on a sport like soccer.
So you mentioned the pit. Obviously, it has that little slant, gives you guys a bit of a home field advantage when you know it. How does the field itself change your game plan when you're at home?
I think they're comfortable at home. The fact that we train there every single day, they know every little area. That's why it's disappointing to lose anywhere, but extremely disappointing to lose at home, because I think, we do have an advantage. The people come and see the all 11 banners there, and I see every coach that we play. They come, and it's the first thing that they point, And I think this year's group has not really bought in, like, what really stands to play for Pierce, because playing for Pierce for a two-year school is special, Not everyone gets to do it, and they're used to, I recruited a lot of players that they used to, they were not the school to beat. And they come over here and it's the school to beat. So they're not used to, even played West LA, who was one of the weakest, on paper, one of the weakest teams in the state. They were up 1-0, they were beating us, and they gave us a run for our money. Because Valley was very tough. Every game is tough, because when they play Pierce, Valley, if they beat Pierce, we made their year. Doesn't matter if they lose every single game. They beat Pierce, they've made their year.
So we've mentioned recruiting a couple times. Obviously, not being full-time limits your ability to recruit. With the success, obviously, you're recruiting well. So what is your approach when it comes to recruiting players?
To me, it's a mindset. We go recruit, and usually everywhere I go, there's 3-4 other schools. Everybody goes after the same players, We have a brochure, and we take pride not only on the championships that we've won, but biggest pride that goes unserved is that the amount of girls that we transfer to four-year school, whether it be in Division I, Division II, NAIA, Division III. I know for a fact that we transfer more players than Cerritos, who is a 5-time defending state champion. Because they look at it as it's just for the moment. Let's win, and they've done a great job. But they do not transfer. And here we're big on that. We're big on, you're coming here 2 or 3 years and you're going to transfer and you're going to do well. And we really push. And through our history, we get girls recruited, schools in New York, Fisher in Boston, Mercy College in upstate New York, who just go basically on reputation on what Pierce has done. So it means a lot to us.
I'm talking to other coaches around campus. That success seems to be largely measured by that advance rate, not the wins and losses, but moving players on to the next level. How much does it really mean to you to see them go on and succeed?
Oh, it means everything to me. I take pride, like I said before. I take pride when one of the first things that I do when our season ends, first thing, even before we collect the uniforms, I meet with my sophomores. And I said, I don't force him. I go, I want each and every one of you to, there's a place for you guys. So I go, and they go into my office, and I go over the whole system on how it works. I will contact coaches for you. I will do whatever you want me to do. And it's paid dividends. First thing I do before I meet with my players, I always meet with my sophomore first, fulfilling the promise that I made to them when I recruited them.
All right, so moving away from Pierce, obviously biggest news in soccer right now in this country is the national men's team not making the World Cup. What was your reaction when you saw that?
Inexcusable. Inexcusable. A country as powerful as this is, when you lose to a country, with all due respect, that's smaller than San Diego, when a team played with players for the future, it wasn't even their A team. They didn't even have fans. That's how. And for us, I think, arrogance got to us, to the U.S. I think they went in just thinking we're the U.S. and we're going to win. But it wasn't just that game. It was the whole qualifiers. You know, they were shaky all around. And the in CONCACAF, it's built for Mexico and the U.S. to make it every World Cup. I mean, when there's six teams, you get 3.5. So basically, you have 4 teams out of 6 making it. You don't make it. That's a problem.
Would it have been a little easier to swallow for you as a fan if it was to a country a little bigger than Trinidad and Tobago?
No, because I think, I mean, the U.S. knew what they had to do, went with their best possible team. And I think what surprised me the most was the reaction of Bruce Arena, their head coach, who was really like, it was not a big deal. You know, I was like, and that's kind of going back to how we started, the passion. I mean, in other countries, not that it's right, but he would not have been allowed back. I mean, just, this is, you know, and he was just, you know, we'll work harder next time. We're like, okay, this is every 4 years.
So from a coach's perspective, what do you see as the problem for that team?
I think it's not just the team. It's the structure, the structure, the way it's here. Our highest level is MLS. It's our professional league. And MLS takes 4 to 5 months off because they want to carbon copy what the NBA does, what the, you know, it works for the NBA, it works for them for Major League Baseball, it works for hockey. It does not work for soccer. Soccer around the world is played. Countries take a month off, if that. Players now, younger players are coming to the U.S. Before it was when they're older, they come and retire. But now you have like Giovanni Dos Santos, one of Mexico's top players, with the Galaxy. And it's a fact. Him and his brother Jonathan, and now Vela, who signed with a new Los Angeles team. But their level of play has decreased enormously. And it has to do with that disrespect. And it's not that the MLS is bad, but you can't have a great product when you take so much time off. And I think, you know, the professional league is huge. And I think the majority of the – and Klinsmann said it. He said if players come back to the MLS, it's going to hurt. And the top players, Bradley, goalkeeper, I mean, all these guys came back and it showed.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that difference. I'm not the biggest of soccer fans. I played it 1 year of my life when I was 8. I felt my shin guards didn't do a sufficient job, and I didn't play again. But I've had this similar discussion with soccer fans how, you know, they may not be a baseball fan, but they can slowly get into it, whereas, you know, soccer fans in the U.S., it's a little difficult. But you watch Major League Baseball, you watch the NBA, you watch the NFL, you're seeing the best in the world compete. You watch MLS, there's a few scattered here and there, but the majority of the greats are over in Europe playing, so it is difficult to really see the best of the best, other than every 4 years. You know, yeah, you get a few Premier League games here and there on Saturday mornings, but for the most part, the U.S. fan doesn't get to see soccer at the highest level. Do you think there's anything that can really be changed to fix that, to get more high-level soccer in front of the fans here?
I think stats show that until the age of 13, soccer is the most played sport in the country. Problem what occurs when you enter high school, you know, now you have these kids like, you know, I mean, if the U.S. top athletes, who are they? The basketball players, the football players, the track and field stars. You look at other countries, those players that I mentioned play soccer. You know, if you had your 4x100s playing soccer, if you had a Kobe Bryant playing and goalkeeper, by the way, he loves soccer. But if Kobe Bryant played soccer, if LeBron was a stopper, just to say a thing, you know, Beckman, the receiver for, you know, I mean, the U.S. will not be touched. And I mention that because that's the role models that teenagers in high school see. You know, all the commercials are with LeBron, you know, Stephen Curry. And so that's who they want to emulate. In other countries, they emulate in Brazil, you know, Neymar. You know, in Argentina, it's Messi. Everybody has a star. And I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, it just drops. Once you get into high school, it drops.
So, obviously, the loss by the men's national team, there's going to be tens of millions of dollars in revenue lost. Fox Sports is going to lose a whole bunch in advertising. but more of a concern, possibly, do you think it's going to hurt the popularity of the sport, any of the growth in the youth mindset in the U.S.?
I don't think so, because in club level right now, like, there's academy. There's academy now on the girls' side for the first time ever. Boys has been around for 6-7 years, and academy is like the best of the best. So basically, if you're a good player, you cannot play high school anymore across the country. So, and one of the reasons behind that is because you play high school for 3 months. So times at four, that's 1 year. So U.S. soccer thought, you know, we're losing 1 year compared to the world. So if you're going to a high school game, you will not look at the best players now. So hopefully down the line, that academy, that extra year, that extra, instead of training 2 times a week, now you're training 4 times a week, and everything multiplies.
Now, you mentioned that those academy teams are there for the women now. Obviously, the women's national team has pretty much surpassed the men's national team in popularity, but they're still basically taking scraps when it comes to payouts and actual appearances and things like that. Do you see that changing, especially with this loss, possibly the women being thrust more into the spotlight?
I think they should. I think one of the things that I coach at Real SoCal, and just to give an example, our boys U15 beat the women's national team with the full starters. So it's definitely different. You know, I think it's not fair, but I think, you know, sponsors look out for, you know, the women's game is it's big in Europe, but their argument is like, okay, but you get 4,000 fans. We get 80,000 fans. You know, the Arsenal men's team gets 90,000 fans. Women's team gets 2,000. So that's their approach, you know. So when they go to advertising, how do you compete? And I think that's where big problem is.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, any professional league for women is far out of anyone's sight and things. You have MLS, but there's no real professional women's league. Is there anything you think, other than that, that can really be changed to kind of get them either on the same level? Obviously, women are having far more success in the eyes of everyone, but it's still...
Well, the irony, you look at the quote-unquote pro league now, there's only 8 teams, and 6 or 7 are in the East Coast. When you have the majority of the soccer in the West Coast, we have no team in California. It's absurd, you know. So something has to change there.
All right. Well, Coach, thank you for joining us. Women's soccer is off today, but they're back on the field on Halloween, Tuesday at Santa Monica at 3 p.m. Women's volleyball saw its 8-game win streak end Wednesday against El Camino College in a non-conference matchup. They look to get things back on track today at Santa Monica at 6 p.m. Men's basketball plans to tip off the season Saturday with their Black and Red Madness at 1:30, featuring inter-squad game, dunk contest, and more for fans. And finally, tomorrow football will take on Allen Hancock College, coming off of their 28-27 win over Citrus last week, which was fueled by a Jonathan Savija touchdown run and a sack from Eric Mateo on an Owls 2-point attempt. Kickoff is at 4 p.m. tomorrow. Hope to see you there. As always, you can follow Roundup News or at Roundup Sports on Twitter for any of your Pierce College sports news. And you can always follow me at the Mains Event on Twitter. This has been Joshua Mains for KPCRadio.com. See you guys next time.